sermons on the life of Elijah, and we've seen how God shaped him and led his life, and how it was that God used the 3 years in which Elijah was sent away by God after he had told Israel that it wasn't going to rain, and Ahab was told that until I come back, it's not going to rain. Last week we saw how it is that after God had shaped Elijah, that he sends him back, and they have the showdown on Mount Carmel, an incredible event, and then the rains come. What a high moment in Elijah's life. He must have just gone on from there, just filled with exuberance and joy. Hang on and listen to today's. Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Those are the prophets of Baal. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I don't make your life like that of one of them." Elijah was afraid, and he ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there while he himself went a day's journey into the desert. He came to a broom tree, sat down under it, prayed that he might die. "I've had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life. I'm no better than my ancestors." And then he lay down under the tree and fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." And he looked around, and there by his head was a cake of bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you." So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights, until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he replied, "I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, broken down your altars, put your prophets to death with a sword. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too." The Lord said, "Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake came a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and he went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. And then a voice said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he replied, "I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, broken down your altars, put your servants to death with the sword. I'm the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too." The Lord said to him, "Go back the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. And when you get there, anoint Hazael king over Aram. Also anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, over Israel, and anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, from Abel-Meholah, to succeed you as prophet. Jehu will put to death any who escaped the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death any who escaped the sword of Jehu. Yet I reserve 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed down to Baal, and all whose mouths have not kissed him." A bit of a different picture than last week. Chapter 18 and chapter 19 are radically different. Or at least we see a radically different Elijah. One who had just been on a mountaintop experience, literally. And who just a couple of days later wants to die. He's had enough. In chapter 18, he's bold and courageous and convicted and prayerful and spirited and had strength to run ahead of Ahab's chariot. Chapter 19, he's fearful and the only running he's doing is running scared. He's exhausted. He's depressed. He's seeking death. It's an interesting picture. What has brought the change? Well, Ahab goes back to Jezebel and he tells her what happened. And it's interesting when people tell stories about something they've seen and you see different or hear different people talking about what they've seen. Sometimes you wonder if they saw the same thing. It can be very different. Or those who tell the story of something and then you hear what people think they heard, and it can vary a whole lot. Jezebel was not impressed by what took place on top of Mount Carmel, except for the fact that Elijah had ordered that Baal's prophets be put to death in fulfillment of what God had required in the book of Deuteronomy. That's all she heard. She didn't care about this animal sacrifice bathed in water, being burnt up by God, whereas Baal's prophets couldn't bring that about. She didn't care. Elijah had killed Baal's prophets. And because of that, she had to do something. And she sends word to Elijah to say, if by this time tomorrow, you are going to be in the same place as those prophets. And if that doesn't happen, then it should happen to me. Now, I want you to think about this for a minute. Do you think she really meant that? I don't. I think she was too scared of what the people of Israel would say, how they might do it, or what they might do if she put Elijah to death. They knew what had happened at Mount Carmel. But I think Jezebel was crafty. What she was really hoping for is one of two things. One, that Elijah would run scared, or two, he'd just plain shut up. She got her wish. He ran scared. This prophet of God who had stood before all of Israel, who had been gathered at Mount Carmel, standing there and say, look, you need to choose this day who you're going to serve. Now, Elijah's running scared. He's fearful for his life. And he goes from the mountaintop experience of Mount Carmel to the point where he wants to die. And I think it's because of his expectations. And I think it's our expectations, even good expectations. I think Elijah's expectation was that the people of Israel would turn their hearts to God, that Ahab and Jezebel would do it. But what happens when they don't, and those expectations aren't met, we come crashing down. And that's what happens here with Elijah. We have expectations. Sometimes we have bad expectations and hopes and dreams, but we can have good expectations, hopes and dreams that when they're not met, we say, what's going on? And there are expectations that God does something. And we think that they're good expectations. We believe they're God-given dreams, God-given visions. They're not happening. And the expectations then turn to demands. God, why aren't you doing this? It was really Elijah feeling that God wasn't keeping his end of the bargain. Look at what all that Elijah had done. And what's happening? It was all for nothing. Or so he thought. And he runs. And he doesn't run to the next town. He runs a long ways away. But one thing I want you to notice first, I forgot this piece. And that is, we may want to point the finger at Elijah, but listen to what James says. He says, Elijah was a man just like us. Pull that finger back. And yet he prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it didn't rain on the land for 3.5 years. Again he prayed, and the heavens gave rain, and the crops produced its, and the earth produced its crops. Look at all that Elijah did. He prayed and it all came about. What a man of faith. Don't read chapter 19. He was a man just like us. But God used him. God used him in powerful ways. And God was going to help him get out of despair. And as I said, he ran away, a long ways away. If you take a look, Jezreel is where he took off leading Ahab's chariot. Okay? You come on down, come to Jerusalem, and then you come to Beersheba. Where's Beersheba? Beersheba is at the southern end of the nation of Judah. Beyond Beersheba, there's nothing but desert. He heads for the desert. It hasn't rained for 3.5 years, so he goes to a place where there's no rain. Not real bright. But he doesn't care. He's gone there. He's run all the way down to Beersheba. In fact, he goes a day's journey beyond that. He leaves a servant back at Beersheba. This is in the nation of the southern kingdom. He was in prophesying to Israel, the northern kingdom. He goes out of Israel, into Judah, out of Judah, beyond that. 150 kilometers plus. Boy, do you think Jezebel got to him? Shaking in his boots. And there, he goes on. He finds a broom tree. Got a couple pictures of broom trees. I want you to notice how solitary they are. He didn't really pick a very good place, but that's where he goes to sleep. Before he does, he prays. Elijah is a praying man. Think about what he did with the widow's son. Praying, asking for that little boy to live again. Something he hadn't seen before, but he dares to pray for it. Prays for God to bring that, his fire to burn up the sacrifice. Elijah was a man of prayer. The only prayer we find in this chapter is a prayer to die. I've had it. I don't want this anymore. So he goes to a broom tree. It's all he can find out in the desert. It's just a scrub tree about 10, 12 feet high. Yeah. Not a great place, but that's where he's at. And then he just goes to sleep. Why bother about anything? Elijah's in a state of depression. He's hurting. And he goes by himself, which is typical of people who are often depressed. They don't want to be around others. And this is something that people deal with significantly in our lives. I looked up some Canadian statistics. And the statistics say that they don't call it necessarily depression, but depression is kind of part of it, called mood disorders. 1 in 8 Canadians can expect to experience that in their lifetime. There's more than eight people here. Okay? It's a reality of life. Women face it twice as much as men. Maybe that's because guys just hide everything. But it also happens more in higher social economic classes than it does in the lower. What's going on? Depression is a reality of life. It's what Elijah is experiencing. Depression is not something new. But it's what Elijah was experiencing. And I want you to look at this passage this morning. And one thing to get out of this is, what did God do to deal with Elijah's depression? Okay? Keep that in mind. Because I think God does something pretty, very profound. First of all, he lets him sleep. Go ahead and sleep a while. Then he sends an angel. And the angel makes a meal for him. He taps Elijah and he says, here's something to eat. He gets a heavenly baked cake and some water. And he eats and he drinks. And what he does next? He goes back to sleep. Even the angel didn't impress him. He's down in the mouth big time. And after he slept for a little while again, the angel wakes him up again. He says, Elijah, I made some more food. You're going on a journey. You better eat, because you're not going to have enough strength for that journey if you don't eat right now. So he did. And then it is that God takes him on a 40-day journey. Takes him to another place. In fact, look where Beersheba is. He's taking him down to Mount Horeb. Now, if you walk straight there, it wouldn't take you 40 days and 40 nights. I say it'd probably make it 12 to 15 days. But God is doing something else with Elijah. I think he was taking his time with him there. There was also something significant about that number 40. Moses had been on Mount Sinai for 40 days with God, in which God was giving him directives. And by the way, he's going to the same mountain. Mount Horeb, it talks about. Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai, same place. Although we're not totally sure where exactly Mount Sinai is, because Mount Sinai is a range of mountains. 4.5 years ago, Joanne and I went to Israel, Egypt, and Jordan. We actually climbed to the top of Mount Sinai. At least one of the places that they think might be the Mount Sinai. It's a mountain range. I mean, it's out in the middle of nowhere. All that live out there are Bedouins who are trying to make a living out there. And that's where God was taking Elijah. 40 days, 40 nights. What else had happened with 40s? Israel had been in the wilderness for 40 years. Later, who goes fasting for 40 days, 40 nights, before he starts his ministry? It's Jesus. God is taking Elijah down to Mount Sinai, to the place of Israel's roots, where God had established his covenant with his people. Yes, he had done things with them leading up to that point, but that was a significant place. And God's bringing him here. And he gets there. He finds a cave. What does he do? Goes to sleep. He goes to sleep. After he rests for a while, God comes to the cave. And he said, Elijah, come out. Come out, I got to show you something. So Elijah makes his way out there. And suddenly there's a strong, powerful wind. And that wind is so strong, it rips stones apart, rocks apart, and shatters them. But he doesn't see God in the wind. And then an earthquake shaking. I don't know if any of you have been in an earthquake. I have. Enough to shake stuff out of the cupboards and life. It's a little scary. He was in an earthquake, but God wasn't in the earthquake. And then there was fire. Maybe like the fire that wiped out that sacrifice. But God wasn't in the fire. And Elijah's getting a little frustrated. Because you see, wind, earthquakes, and fire are often symbols of God's power and majesty and also of His judgment. And that's exactly what Elijah wanted to have happen. He'd had it with Ahab and Jezebel. If God would only come with either His wind, His earthquake, or His fire and destroy them, great. But God isn't in them. God's not going to do it. And then there's that gentle whisper. And God's in the whisper. And Elijah covers his face. God had asked Elijah before he started this earthquake scene and this wind and earthquake and fire scenes. Before he started that, he asked him, why are you here? What are you doing here, Elijah? And he gives the spiel, I've been zealous for the Lord. Man, nobody's been serving you like I've been serving you. Nobody's been doing what I've been doing. The people of Israel have been going away from you, being led by this crazy man Ahab, and his even crazier wife Jezebel. And I'm the only one left. What did he find out in chapter 18? Obadiah had been feeding 50 prophets each in two different caves. I'm the only one left. Now they want to kill me too. Might as well end it all. All of this scene happens and God comes again. What are you doing here? He gives the same spiel. Nothing's changed yet. I'm the only one left. If you read it, it's word for word the same spiel. And then God says, I've got something for you to do. God says, I want you to go to Aram. And I want you to anoint the king of Aram. This is kind of a different thing to do. He's now going to a foreign country. He's going to anoint the next person who's going to be king. Then he's got to go to Judah's next king and anoint him. And then he needs to find a guy by the name of Elisha, and anoint him to be the next prophet. What God is saying here to Elijah is, look, I still have work for you to do. And he gently tells him, he doesn't give him a chewing out. He's talking in his whisper voice. And Elijah is finding out something about God being gracious and loving and compassionate and caring. The God who often speaks in a whisper rather than a thundering, booming voice. Even when sometimes we want Him to thunder, but He's gracious and patient. How does God come to us to bring a Savior into the world? Like a baby. not as this powerful king, but he brings them to this world as a baby. And he gives himself for the sake of his people. Elijah didn't quite get that yet. He liked Mount Carmel. He didn't like God's patience and gentleness. But he says, go, I have a task for you to do. Go take care of that. And he says, what's going to happen is that Aram, this Hazael, the king of Aram, is going to come and he's going to bring punishment to Israel. And what he doesn't accomplish, Jehu, the king of Judah, is going to do. And what he doesn't do, Elisha's going to do. It's coming, Elijah, but in my time. What God is doing, and by the way, if you want to see where this is at, if you think about all the way where he was down at Mount Sinai, and from Beersheba to Mount Sinai, it's about 400 kilometers plus. Now God sends him all the way up to Damascus. So we're back another, probably about close to 600 kilometers. Okay, this story doesn't happen in 2 days. Okay? You got another task to do. Go way up to Aram, way up there. Damascus is at the top of the screen. Then he's got to go back down to Judah to find the king Jehu there. And then go find Elisha. But what he's saying is, Elijah, you got to go find him. Go find him. And he found Elisha. And Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen, and he himself was driving the 12th pair. Elijah went up to him and threw his cloak around him. And Elisha then left his oxen, because he knew what that meant. That meant that he was being appointed as the next prophet. But he left his oxen right away and ran after Elijah. Let me kiss my father and mother goodbye, he said. And then I'll come back to you. Go back, Elijah replied. What have I done to you? It's as if he's saying, oh man, you don't know what you're in for. So Elisha left him and went back, took his yoke of oxen, slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat, gave it to the people, and they ate. And then he set out to follow Elijah and become his attendant. Now, one thing I want you to notice here about Elisha, he's a rich man. To have one yoke of oxen, you were doing well. He had 12. He had 12. But as soon as Elijah says to him, you're to be the next prophet, or symbolically, he says, fine, I'll go do it. I'll follow you. And he takes up his plow and all of the equipment was made of wood, knocked it apart, and he creates a fire, and he slaughters the 24 oxen. They had some party. He said, I want to go back. So I kiss my mom and dad goodbye. And he says, and then it's party time. And they had a great party. But he follows them. And then Elijah goes to do what God calls him to do. And I want you to notice three things this morning. Remember I told you, what is it that God does to help Elijah out of his depression? First of all, he gives him a meaningful task. Elijah, I got something for you to do. Hazael, Jehu, Elisha. It took him some time to do it. It took the focus off himself. And it opened his eyes to a bigger task. Secondly, he gave him a companion. A sense of community. He wasn't alone. He says, there are 7,000 who haven't bowed the knee to Baal. But not only that, Elijah's going to go with you. It says that Elisha became his attendant. And the third thing is, he gave him a reminder of God's faithfulness. 7,000 yet who had not bowed the knee to Baal. You know, sometimes I hear people talking or talk about the church, and they say things aren't good in the church. Things are going downhill. And I think there's too much of the Elijah mentality that can spring up within us, that I'm the only one left. And we need to be reminded, like Elijah was reminded, that there's more than you think. And God has ways of working His way in the world to bring about His purposes. Don't be so quick to say, the church is done for. I know people who talk like that. They're good Christian people. But the way they talk is that the church has no future. Quit talking like Elijah. See that God gives us a meaningful task. He gives us Christian community where we can work together and be encouraged together. And He gives us reminders of how it is that He's working in His world to accomplish His purposes. If you want to help someone who's going through depression, take them slowly. God didn't push him, but He took him slowly. Help people to find that meaningful task in their lives. Help them to see that they're part of a community that cares and loves them. Try to find ways to remind them of God's faithfulness. It took a while for God to get Elijah out of depression. Don't expect something real fast necessarily in people's lives. But be with them and encourage them. And if you find yourself there slipping into that mentality, that depression, try to find that community, that attendant, that companion that will walk you through it. And by the way, this is one of the beautiful things about your community groups. Hope you participate in them, because it says you're part of a community that's going to care for each other and build each other up. God's giving us great things to do. Elijah wasn't quite done. He was about ready to hand it off to Elisha. And what's interesting is that Elijah doesn't go through a regular death. God, he was a special person in God's eyes. God didn't just put Elijah on the scrap heap. But He says, I've got more for you to do. And if we get to the point where we're struggling and worried and depressed, then maybe all we need to do is think about what God has accomplished for us. He sent His Son. Victory's been won. We just got to reap that final harvest. That final day when Jesus returns. But the course has been set. And so we go forward as His people. Let's pray together.